Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. I am your host, Sarah, and I'm happy to be joining you again today for another episode of this podcast, talking about one of my favorite subjects in the world, which is books and reading. I am hot, y'all. I live in Northern California and we are having a heat wave and it's only June. It is supposed to get the hottest this week of tomorrow at about 112, and that's just too hot. It's just too hot. Our air conditioning can't seem to keep up with it. It's a little bit miserable. I'm just really, really, really glad that I do not have an outside job. And for all of those people who do work outdoors, I salute you and I encourage you to please stay hydrated. I know it's pretty warm most places right now, and so I just encourage you to stay as cool as you can and hydrate. Because it is warm. And that is my complaint for the day, which doesn't really have anything to do with books, except that at least I can stay inside in the air conditioning and read when I have the time. So there's that. At any rate, I mentioned last week that I would be talking today about the second book of the Trials of Apollo series written by Rick Riordan. And I'm actually going to be talking about Rick Riordan in general and that series in particular. If you don't know Rick Riordan, you should definitely check him out if you are a fan of young adult books, kind of along the lines of Harry Potter. Now, you know, there's magic, but the difference is that these center around demigods, especially the Percy Jackson series. He's actually got several series. So let me back up just a little bit more. Rick Riordan first started out with the Percy Jackson series. If you haven't read them, you should. You may have heard of the movies. You may have even seen the movies. I think they did the first two. I'm not going to go into that because I'm always a book snob and the books are always better. The books are definitely better in this case. I'm not dissing you if you like the movies. That is your opinion, and you can love whatever movies you want. That's your right. But I am here to talk about the books that I love. I came a little late to the Percy Jackson bandwagon. I actually saw the first movie before I'd read any of the books, which is unusual for me. I usually read books before I see the movies. I think the first one came out when I was in grad school, which would explain why I didn't have time to read or hadn't discovered that. And I was home on a vacation, home in Montana, and my parents and my brother, I think I've mentioned, own the movie theater in my hometown, and Percy Jackson was the movie playing that weekend that I was home, so I was able to see it and listen to my parents and my brother talk about the differences between the book and the movie and what they liked and what they didn't like, etc. And I thought, why have I not read this series? So there are actually two Percy Jackson series, and the first one follows Percy Jackson and his other friends. Percy Jackson is a Greek demigod. He is the son of Poseidon, and he finds this out when he is about 11 or 12 and finds out that there is a Camp Half-Blood in upstate New York where Greek demigods go to be trained, and because they attract monsters, there's all of this great myth and mythology that happens in these books. So the Greek gods, the Olympians, are now above the Empire State Building. Mount Olympus is now on the 600th floor of the Empire State Building. If you can take the elevator there, you would end up on Mount Olympus. They have moved west as Western civilization has moved west, and the gods survive as long as people remember them, as long as people, you know, have them in their collective consciousness. And there are a lot of things in Greek mythology and about the Greek gods that are still very present in our Western society and our Western civilization. So the Greek gods are alive and well and living above Manhattan, and they are continuing to populate the world with demigods who then have to go on quests and have to go out into the world and do these things. they can't live normal lives because they are demigods. They do attract immortal monsters and those sorts of things. So they do eventually have to figure out a way to get to Camp Half-Blood, or, you know, figure something out so that they can survive in this world as a demigod. The normal humans, the mortals in this world who are not demigods or who do not possess the ability to see this world, see through something called the mist. And so the mist is what hides this mythological world from the rest of us. So there could be, you know, a giant dragon tromping down the streets of Manhattan, and we mortals would just see, I don't know, a large dog or something. There's all sorts of ways that the mist hides the world. So the first series follows Percy Jackson from the time he's about 11 or 12 through 5 or 6 years as he grows up and figures out this whole world that he is a part of, understanding that his father is Poseidon. It's really fun. There's a lot of great adventures. Each book, it kind of like Harry Potter, each book takes place in a consecutive year of his life during that time. And then there's a second book or a second series also not centered on Percy Jackson, but Percy Jackson is in it, and he is part of another quest. And that series is, instead of being consecutive years, it's just several books in the same series talking about this quest. And that book is fabulous because we learn that there are also Roman demigods, that there's a whole other camp. That one is in the Bay Area. And Roman and Greek demigods find out about each other. They actually end up having to go on a quest together and figure things out. And the books are just a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun. They're funny. They bring up all of those qualities of books that I love, you know, in terms of friendship and loyalty and figuring out your own way in this world and figuring out where your path takes you. You might be a little bit different. You know, you might be a Greek demigod or a Roman demigod. So you've got the Greeks and the Romans. Rick Riordan, thank you so much. But that's not all. But wait, there's more, as the Count on Sesame Street would say. There is also a series that he has done that has Egyptian gods in it, and that is a totally separate series, and there are two main characters in that. That one is a main character of a brother and sister who, it's different from the demigod series, but they still interact with the Egyptian gods. They find out that just like Greek gods, the Egyptian gods are still in existence in the world, and yes, these are the same world. So these take place in our modern society, and the Greek gods, the Roman gods, the Egyptian gods, they all exist in this world. In fact, there are three short stories in which the main characters of the Egyptian books and Percy and Annabeth from the Percy Jackson books come together. So there are these three short stories. I don't know if there are plans to merge those worlds any further, but there are these three short stories where these two different, very different worlds come together. So the Egyptian series is also good. There aren't as many books. There are the most books in the Greek and Roman demigod series, but the Egyptian series, if you love Egyptian mythology, if you love Egyptian, you know, that whole Egyptian culture and those types of stories, then you will love the Egyptian set of books from Rick Riordan. But wait, there's more. There is a recent series that just came out, and that is centering around a main character whose name is Magnus Chase. It turns out Magnus Chase is the cousin of Annabeth Chase. I'm not giving anything away. That's pretty much brought up right away in the book. Annabeth Chase is Percy Jackson's girlfriend. So Annabeth Chase is a Greek demigod. Her mother is Athena. And turns out that Magnus Chase is a Nordic demigod. I think they call them demigods in that series. But his father is a Greek god. So there's something about the Chase family that attracts deities of all types. So in this series, and there's two books out in that series right now as well, and the next one is coming out, I think, this fall. I'd have to double check that. The Magnus Chase series, and that deals with Norse mythology. So you've got Odin, and you've got Loki, and you've got really fascinating, you know, Norse mythology. And again, in the same world as the Egyptian and the Roman and the Greek demigods or the Greek gods, they're all existing in the world. You know, they're all existing in different ways in terms of how people view them, how people remember them, how people understand them. So if you are at all interested in mythology, if you are at all interested in, you know, if you like these kinds of mythical, magical young adult books, then I highly recommend that you check out Rick Riordan because he is awesome and I love everything that he's written. So we are going to take our first break of the podcast, but then when we come back, we'll be talking more specifically about the trials of Apollo. So stay tuned and I will be right back.
Do you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do? All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The health and wellness podcast dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. We are talking about author Rick Riordan today. Specifically, now we're going to be turning our attention to The Trials of Apollo, his most recent series dealing with the world of the Greek and Roman gods. So this book, or this series, takes place after the second of the Percy Jackson series, after the series where the Greek and the Roman demigods come together and go on this quest. So this now focuses, rather than Percy Jackson is in it a little bit, especially in the first book, just I think kind of as a segue into this world. If you haven't read any of those books, you can pick this book up and or this series up. I don't think that would be a problem, but if you're anything like me, you're going to want to start at the beginning so that you get the whole world. You get all, you know, all of the backstory so that everything makes sense, because characters do pop up in both of these books that are explained more fully in the other series, either the first or the second series. So I would start at the beginning, but you know, if you just want to check out this new trilogy, then go ahead. So this is, again, as I said, after that second series of Percy Jackson books, after the seven demigods of Greek and Roman origin go on their quest and come back. And so this says, how do you punish an immortal? This is for book one, The Hidden Oracle of the Trials of Apollo. How do you punish an immortal? By making him human. After angering his father Zeus, the god Apollo is cast down from Olympus. Weak and disoriented, he lands in New York City as a regular teenage boy. Now, without his godly powers, the 4,000-year-old deity must learn to survive in the modern world until he can somehow find a way to regain Zeus's favor. But Apollo has many enemies, gods, monsters, and mortals who would love to see the former Olympian permanently destroyed. Apollo needs help, and he can think of only one place to go, an enclave of modern demigods known as Camp Half-Blood. So you can see why you may want to read the other ones first, because you'll know more about Camp Half-Blood. You'll know more about some of the characters that they talk about. This is listed as being for grades 5 through 9 and age levels 10 through 14. So you've got that younger, young adult crowd. And, another good, great one to read as a family if you do that. And my family doesn't read them as a family. We all read them and then we talk about them. We're all adults, so we don't just sit down together and read them. Plus, I'm in a completely different state than they are. So, but we all love these books, and so we all talk about them as soon as they come out. If you are a Rick Riordan fan, you probably have had this book, the new one, the second one. You probably got it the day it came out. You've probably already read it. So I'm preaching to the choir here, but if you have not read them, then I highly, again, recommend these. So in this first book, this takes place, again, after that second series of Percy Jackson books, and there has been a war between demigods and gods and giants, and as part of that, the Apollo is punished for part of his role in that war, something that he did. And I'm not going to give stuff away, but he is punished. He is sent to Earth as a human. This has precedence. There have been other times in Greek mythology when Zeus has sent gods, turned gods mortal and sent them to Earth. In this case, Apollo has to, you know, he finds himself, he's about a 16-year-old teenage boy. He goes from being the god of archery and music and healing, and he's very handsome, especially in his own eyes. You know, he's just irresistible to men and women alike, and now he's this, as he puts it, flabby teenager with acne, and this just drives him to no, and it just drives him crazy to no end. As part of being mortal, he has he ends up being in service to someone, and that turns out to be a very, very odd young woman named Meg, who it takes a while through this book to find out some of her backstory and figure out what exactly is going on with Meg. She is a demigod. You will find out more about that as you read, but she just annoys the snot out of Apollo. Lester Papadopoulos, that's his mortal name, his 16-year-old human name. And so he encounters her almost immediately after being sent to Earth as a mortal, and they have to make their way to Camp Half-Blood together, and then they have to go through all of these different quests that lead to, hopefully, Apollo become, you know, being returned to Mount Olympus as a god. So this book has a lot of things to recommend it. You get Apollo, who is, you know, used to being a god for thousands of years. This actually, I think, is the third time he's been punished by Zeus and been sent as a mortal. So you would think that he would be a little bit used to it by now, but gods don't have the greatest memories in terms of that sort of thing, it turns out. So, you know, he's blocked those periods a little bit. So he doesn't have his godly powers. He is a mortal 16-year-old. He has a sketchy memory of his time as a god. So some things he remembers, some things he doesn't. He's now in service to this young, strange street urchin, you could call her. That's what he calls her in the beginning. She seems to be kind of maybe homeless. He encounters her in an alley where she pops up out of a dumpster and starts throwing trash at the people who are stalking Apollo. So that's Meg. And Meg is now in service, or Apollo is now in service to Meg in this first book, and they have to figure out how to work together. They go to Camp Half-Blood. Percy Jackson is in the beginning of this book. He helps them to get to Camp Half-Blood, but he is not a main character in this particular series. So he does appear, as I said, to give kind of that continuity and to bring the tie the other books into this new series and sort of just segue you into this. It's not a new world. It's just focusing on a different character, and now a character who used to be a god. So you are seeing this progression that Apollo has to make from being a god and ordering demigods to go on quests to now being a mortal teenager who is being sent on quests that he would normally send other people on. He's not used to doing things himself. He's very vain. He's very selfish. He is very narcissistic. Well, that's the same thing as vain, but he's very selfish, very full of himself. And now he is just a regular person, and he has to deal with that, and he has to deal with the way that regular people are treated by the gods. So it's an interesting progression for him in this book. The other interesting thing is that when he gets to Camp Half-Blood, he meets three of his mortal children. So that's a little bit awkward, considering that they're all about the same age as he is. So he has to figure out how to deal with that. But he is an interesting character. I'm trying to think of ways. He is surprisingly likable for as obnoxious as he can be, you know, as selfish as he can be. And he does start to see the world around him a little bit differently as this book goes on. But he is definitely, you know, even though his memories are not fully intact, he still has that memory of what it means to be a god, what it means to be all powerful. And, you know, he is the sun god also, so he drives the sun chariot. So that's another thing that he's used to. He's the god of poetry. He's the god of music. He's the sun god. He is the god of healing. He's the god of archery. So he has all of these things that he now can't do just as you know, the snap of a finger. He has to actually work for things. And for Apollo, that is definite punishment. So Zeus chose wisely in terms of how he chose to punish Apollo for his part in the last series. We are going to take our second break of the podcast. When we come back, then I will be turning our attention to that second book in this series, and that is The Dark Prophecy. So stay tuned, and I will be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. This is the final section of our podcast on author Rick Riordan and his new series, The Trials of Apollo. So the second book just came out in May, and I finally was able to find some time to read it. As I mentioned in the second segment, if you are a Rick Riordan fan, then I'm sure you have already read this book. If you have not, and you're like me, and you're still trying to find time because it's fun like all of them are. If you have never read Rick Riordan, what are you waiting for? Go out and check some of them out of the library. Go out and buy them. Go out and get them on your Kindle or your e-reader or whatever you have. Get it on an audiobook. However you enjoy books, then you should go out and enjoy these. At any rate, the second book, as I said, just came out. This is The Dark Prophecy, and the little blurb on Amazon about this one says, Zeus has punished his son Apollo, god of the sun, music, archery, poetry, and more, by casting him down to earth in the form of a gawky, acne-covered 16-year-old mortal named Lester. The only way Apollo can reclaim his rightful place on Mount Olympus is by restoring several oracles that have gone dark. What is affecting the oracles, and how can Apollo/Lester do anything about them without his powers? After experiencing a series of dangerous and frankly humiliating trials at Camp Half-Blood, Lester must now leave the relative safety of the demigod training ground and embark on a hair-raising journey across North America. Fortunately, what he lacks in godly graces, he's gaining in new friendships. With heroes who will be very familiar to fans of the Percy Jackson and the Olympians and Heroes of Olympus series. Come along for what promises to be a harrowing, hilarious, and haiku-filled ride. So even the blurb sounds fun, right? Sounds full of adventure, and you get to see that even the blurb, you can tell that Lester/Apollo is growing a little bit. He's actually learning some stuff from his time as a mortal. He is figuring out, you know, he's figuring out that friends are helpful, that relationships are helpful. His relationship with Meg has to continue to evolve in this book. There are things that happen at the end of the last book that have to be sorted out in this one. And then as this says, there are characters who are familiar to fans of those first two series. So you'll be excited to know that some of your favorites have come back, and you'll get to see more of them and just share more of the adventures of some of your favorite characters, which I really loved. Harrowing, hilarious, and haiku-filled ride is what this book promises to be, according to the blurb. And the haiku references every chapter. Rather than having a chapter title, every chapter begins with a haiku, because Apollo is the god of poetry. And in the Percy Jackson and the Olympians series, when they encounter Apollo, he is going through this haiku phase, and he's always composing haikus about everything, and they're never good. They're really bad haikus. And so each chapter starts with a haiku that tells you a little bit about what's going to happen in that chapter, and some of them are really groan worthy. They're pretty funny. So that is that reference. Again, he's learning. He's getting a little more likable, actually. He's not quite so self-centered in this book. He is starting to see the world around him a little bit differently. He's starting to see relationships a little bit differently. He's starting to see mortals a little bit differently. And he continues to evolve through this book. He's still, you know, got those same characteristics of the world should be centered around him. He is, after all, the god Apollo. And why aren't people paying attention to him? And why aren't they just, you know, being amazed and bowing down in awe and wonder whenever he walks into a room? That can get a little old, and it's supposed to, because he is, you know, he has been a god for thousands of years, so it's understandable. It's definitely eye rolling. You do a lot of eye rolling at his vain and self-centeredness, but he is growing. One thing that I like about these books is that they are just chock full of pop culture references. I mean, that Rick Riordan can drop pop culture references in like nobody's business. He just they're everywhere. There's not a chapter that goes by that doesn't have something. I do have a friend who reads these, and that's one thing that he doesn't like about the series. For some reason, it bugs him that there's just too many in his mind. So there is that aspect. You may, you know, it may not be your thing. It may kind of pull you out of the moment or pull you out of the series. But for me, they don't pull me out of the story. They just make me giggle a little bit, because as I'm reading and then suddenly this pop culture reference pops up, you know, the gods have Hephaestus TV. They have GodTube instead of YouTube. He's always talking about updating Instagram or Snapchat. And so there's just a lot of those great references. And Rick Riordan himself must be very in touch with a lot of things pop culture, because there's some things in there that even I go, huh, not entirely sure what that is, but you know, I'll sound old right now and say, well, it must be what the young kids are saying these days. I don't say it in that voice. Actually, I do say it in that voice just because I'm a dork that way. Moving on. Okay, so this book just came out. I just read this book. I loved this book as much as I have loved the other books. They take me back to a world that I have grown to love. They take me back to characters that I have grown to love. They introduce me to new characters that I learn to love and enjoy in this series. And I love watching the characters grow and develop. I love, like I said, that some of the characters from the other books still are making appearances. So if you love them in the other books, then you can still check in with them and see how things are going, even though the story doesn't revolve around them, which Apollo would be horrified. You know, fortunately, this book does revolve around him, but if he were some of the other characters, he would be horrified because he is no longer the main focus. I don't know what else to say. How many times can I say I love this book? I love this book. I recommend all of these books if you, as I said, if you are a fan of mythology, if you are a fan of adventure stories, if you are a fan of young adult series, then these are wonderful to check out. They are great summer reading. You know, if you've got children who need books to read this summer who are in that age group, this says 10 to 14, grade levels 5 through 9, you of course know your children better than just generic labelings do, you know, just generic age and grade levels. So you know if they're ready for a book that is full of adventure. The books are, they're not dark. You know, there's some scary things that happen, but they're not, you know, terribly graphic or scary or filled with horror or anything like that. They do have adventure, so they can be a little scary maybe for younger audiences, but for the age that they're recommended for or the maturity level that they're recommended for, they're just great. You know, and again, you know your children better than I do, or better than any person writing a blurb does. So you know what types of books that your family, your children like. So you can make that determination if they will like these books or not. I happen to love them. My adult family happens to love them. And so we all enjoy whenever a new one comes out. I'm really glad that I got to finally get around to reading this one. So that is all the time that we have for this podcast. I hope you will join me next week when I am going to be looking at a series that I discovered that I have that I hadn't heard of before. The Secret of Spell Shadow Manor series. That's kind of hard to say. The Secret of Spell Shadow Manor. So I'm excited to read that. It was described as Harry Potter meets Hunger Games. So if you join me next week, we'll talk about that and see if I agree with that. You can see if I agree with that assessment or not. So thank you so much for joining me. Please join me again next week. In the meantime, you can find all of our podcasts at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can download those podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and all of the apps that you use for your mobile devices. And you can follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Twitter, GSMC Book Review. So come check us out on social media, leave us some comments, whatever floats your boat. Hope you have a wonderful week. Again, I'm going to tell you, stay out of the heat and hydrate. But while you're doing that, also try to go get yourself lost in a good book. Thank you.